Hello, everybody, and welcome to RHAB's coverage of Episode 1 of Survivor New Zealand, Thailand. I'm your host, Shannon Gates, and I'm here to talk about what I thought was a really great premiere, just a great episode of Survivor in general. To do that, I have to welcome my first Survivor playing guest. I'm so honored to be talking to someone who was such a massive force to be reckoned with in his season, just an absolute star of Australian Survivor Season 2, which was such an amazing season. He definitely came out of the blocks in the premiere episode and through the pre-merge, through the merge, so he's someone who'll be awesome to talk to about this episode. Please welcome the great Henry Nicholson. Henry, thank you so much for being here.
Shannon Gates, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
It's going to be a really good, awesome episode to talk about. Did you enjoy the episode?
Yeah, I did. I haven't watched any Survivor since being back. I was a bit Survivored out after doing it myself. So it was actually really nice to get a feel for Survivor again and watch my first episode of the new Season 2 for New Zealand. I thought it was really good.
Well, we're very happy that you chose for your first episode to be this one and that you're here to talk about it on RHAP. Before we get into everything with the episode, because there was so much strategy to talk about, please just let us know what you've been up to since we spoke to you. I think we heard from you in September last year. You did a very long exit interview with Nick Iadanza, which I thought was really good. Got to explain some very in-depth strategy about some of your big moves, but we haven't heard from you since then. So what have you been up to?
Yeah, since then, I've kind of just got back into life, which has been good. I've become a pancreatic cancer ambassador as well, which is obviously close to me as people watched our season, they'll know about me and my mum's story. So that's been huge. So worked with them since then and into this year. I've also started a master's of teaching, so I'll be a primary teacher by the end of the year.
Are you just lying about that to us? I don't know if I can trust your professions.
Exactly. I'm actually just a tradie. So just kind of, it's kind of before Survivor, my life was contained by my mum and all that, and since losing her and then going on Survivor and then coming off Survivor, kind of like me starting my life again. So it's been really good the way I've gone about it, especially in this new year. So I guess that's why I kind of stepped back from Survivor a bit. I haven't really watched much, just to kind of get back to who I am and be with my family and focus on me. And it's been really good, but I'm in a real good place now after the show, and I'm excited. I really loved watching the episode. So seems like I want my Survivor 6 back. So it's really good.
Well, we're very happy to hear that. And I've personally seen some of the stuff on social media that you've done with PanCare. And I love seeing people use their Survivor platform for something genuinely so good. So that's just amazing work. And we'll definitely hand out those handles and websites at the end of the show.
Yeah, thanks. Like I said, I'm just an average person like anyone. And I'm no different. So people are following me or listening to me, then I'm going to send good messages, good vibes, and hopefully in one way or another change this world. So appreciate that, Shannon, and yeah, looking forward to cracking into this.
For sure, because it was such a good episode. I know that you agree that it was, I mean, our expectations were low coming off season one, but it really exceeded my expectations. I thought that the production value was so good. I thought there was a really good focus on strategy and tribe dynamics. Every contestant, I think, got a confessional. Like, that's such even editing. And so I loved all of that. My one gripe, and I'm sorry to bring this up so early in the podcast because I did love 99% of it, I didn't love that there was so little time between the immunity challenge and tribal council. It was just very rushed, and that's a very important part of the episode. You know, give me, you know, take out the reward challenge, put it in next episode because it was entertaining, and give me 15 more minutes before tribal council. But otherwise, I really did love a lot of it. What did you think?
Yeah, I quite enjoyed it. It kind of reminded me similar to Australian season one in a sense. Like, it's just beginning to get that production value that America has. Mm-hmm. It's on the way to getting a real good, you know, season behind it. So it's really good. It's interesting what you said about the ending. I thought also Tribal Council, some of the audio was a bit strange to hear. I liked the setup, but that was a bit hard. And yeah, it was kind of that lackluster ending. But the leading up to it, I thought it was great. There's a lot of seeds that have been planted by the cast, and I think there's many avenues that this season can go.
Yeah, the tribal council setup was beautiful in the cave, but it all sounded like they were just like in a tiled bathroom and it was kind of echoey.
Exactly.
So, I mean, they took a risk with that. The lighting and sound was a problem, but it looked really good. And I think that it's something a lot of people have been talking about today. So at least it made its mark.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it did.
And also what they did was they had a really big focus on location, which is something that the US and Australian Survivor franchises haven't really been able to do since, I guess, Survivor Token Teams, because they've just been doing the same locations over and over.
Yeah.
And now they're inland. To me, how, if you were on a beach, obviously, how would it affect you, do you think, playing the game on this lake without the beach setup?
In terms of playing, the one thing I think that might be different is that you've got kind of a 360 degree. Depends if they set up close to the lake or not. If they set back more in the jungle, you've got 360 degrees. So I know on our season that the other tribe set up their camp, so I was looking back away from the beach. So you've only got one direction to go with a beach. And so the scrambling is very difficult. But if you've got that kind of 360 degree view, if you're on this lake and you're a bit further back, which it looked to be at times, it was a bit jungly and it would be like that. You've got more time and more space to kind of rummage and scramble. But if it's just on the beach, you know you've got already one side locked off. So everyone's going to be behind you and in that direction. So that's the only real difference I see. I did quite like it. It brought back a few memories of China, Survivor China for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but they talked a lot about the culture and and then, which was pretty cool. And
yeah, I love that.
Yeah, I thought it was a good little... where was the first one?
The first one was in Nicaragua.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so I'm cool with them changing locations all the time. That's really cool. So we had two at Samoa, but yeah, definitely it's a different vibe. It's a different feel. So it's really cool.
Yeah, it is great. And that's why we love having you on the podcast, Henry, because we ask you a question about location and you answer with how you could handle it strategically. And that's what we're all about at RHAP. So that's great. Moving into... from just your first impressions, and we're definitely going to get into all the characters in much more in-depth style, but who jumped out to you as people you really liked or really didn't like?
Yeah, I thought JT was probably the biggest standout for me.
Mm-hmm.
If there's one piece of advice it could be anyone, it's do something. When you get out there, do something. Like, go form an alliance. You're not going to go in and ask someone to be in alliance with them and they're going to be like, nah, it's day one, everyone's nervous, everyone needs that security blanket, so no one's going to reject you. So if you think you're on the bottom, go align with someone and you're no longer on the bottom. Like, and I also thought in the other tribe, I thought Dylan did that well in a sense. So I guess Dylan and JT probably, they're on different tribes, aren't they? Yeah. I thought they both kind of just, their minds were switched on from the start, which is a massive asset in the game and what I look for in people to follow in a sense. Who else? I just personally, for the personality, I liked Adam. I think he does understand the game too. And Lisa, another one who kind of seems like she's a massive fan.
Yeah, but she's a patron of RHAP as well. So she's part of the family.
Okay.
Yeah.
She obviously knows the game well. And when she was talking to, I can't remember, was it, maybe it was Tess,
yeah.
I was like, because she just said in a confessional how she wants to keep her cards kind of close. She doesn't want everyone to know all this stuff. And it was basically her giving a masterclass to Tess.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, if it wasn't Tess, it might have gone straight over Tess's head, but maybe it was someone else. They might be like, well, this girl switched on, because straight away I was getting vibes that she knew what she was talking about and she was displaying that. So she's really switched on. So I'm looking forward to how she goes. But yeah, those ones kind of stood out in a sense.
I think we're on the same page with a lot of those. Lisa, I did worry pre-season and still worry that she's such an obvious intellectual threat, and she also won the puzzle. Yep. So I do worry that they'll be like, this girl's a super fan. She's really smart. We have to get her at some point. But she said she's trying to make it more about, I'm here for the experience and I'm a mom. And I think that's a pretty good attitude with that. But we're going to get way more into all of the contestants later on. I'd love to start first by talking about such a unique, quite unique. It's happened similarly before in US Survivor, but it was a really awesome moment to start the show when they went to this first challenge, didn't tell them what the reward was for, didn't even tell them their tribes, obviously now we know why, and then made them do a schoolyard pick. Now,
yes.
Did you like this twist?
I didn't mind it because it does straight away throw strategy in the air. So in that aspect, I liked it. It's hard because I'm a player, so I can now look at it from production side and playing side and viewer side in a sense. So, you know, it's interesting because production would always want two teams that are fair. They don't want one team to go on a run. So it's a risk by them. But, and especially, I'm not sure if they knew about Matt and Dave's friendship, but obviously that was going to be a factor if one of them became captain.
Yeah.
So I think it was a bold move by production, but I think I did like it because straight away it made people choose who they liked and who they didn't like. It basically outlined people on the bottom, and I think the people on the bottom who got picked near the bottom saw that straight away, and that's evidence, and they started moving like JT and Dylan. So, you know, when you know you're on the bottom, that's when you're most powerful in a sense, because then you switch on, you play hard and you go for it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was interesting on that aspect as well. But yeah, I liked the change.
Yeah. For me, I loved it as a starting moment to the season because it put that strategy right in there. It was such a bold moment, something we haven't seen for such a long time. It, you know, really highlighted all those social dynamics that you spoke about. I do worry about it long term because when I think about past seasons that have done that schoolyard pick to begin or very early on, with something like a Survivor Palau or Survivor Gabon. Well, Palau is the most uneven season physically of all time. Gabon is very uneven.
Yep.
Something like Survivor Exile Island, where they did a schoolyard pick, and I think episode two, it wasn't very physically mismatched, but one tribe had like all the entertaining people and one tribe had all the really boring people. So I do think that the producers are there for a reason. I trust them more than I trust contestants to make even tribes, to make, you know, similarly entertaining tribes. It doesn't always work out, but that's their job. And if we see Chani lose every challenge from now on, if they don't swap for a while or if they just never win one, then we'll say, well, that didn't really work out because they chose these uneven tribes. So long term, I'm concerned. Yeah. Short term, in the context of the episode, I thought it was such an entertaining moment. And to touch on what you said before, one of the most entertaining things about it was something we spoke about in the preseason, that Matt and Dave are friends, maybe even closer friends than I realized. This is insane to me that they're in like an accidental blood versus water. It's crazy. And what would you do if you came out and saw a good high school friend out on the beach with you?
Oh, it's so strange. I'm still after watching and not sure. One, if I like that slip through production, did it slip through production? All these things are going through my head. Like, they should be so thorough to know that if they're from the same school, they said.
Mm-hmm. And they know each other's families. And I read preseason that they last saw each other 3 weeks before filming at a birthday party. So they've got a close connection.
And you'd know that. There's so much social media. I'm sure they were, you know, the people that, you know, cast these people, I would assume would know that kind of stuff, whether it's a little twist they want to add in. It's super strange.
I do get the feeling it was accidental though. Like,
was it? Okay,
I don't know. I don't know, but it would be a very odd twist just to have these two people. It's quite unfair.
Yeah, it is. So, if I saw someone, I don't know what I'd do. To be honest, it would throw in my game plan because one, like, I was completely different who I am and the game
right
player
there, someone
I am
to be like, that's not
different.
A yoga instructor.
Yeah, well, that's exactly. Like, a lot of our season, we were in the same casting rooms as each other.
Mm-hmm.
So we had ideas. There were a lot of twos and threes in the same casting room. So we had information about each other on that level.
Right.
Not even close to knowing. So it's an interesting dynamic, which I'm sure we'll go into a little further.
Yeah, at first I thought this is so amazing for them. They have someone who they trust so much, and I still think that is true. They're very lucky in that regard. But then I think I go out there, I see someone who I'm friendly with, you have that implicit trust, which actually might come back to bite you. And then how will they ever get rid of each other? Like, that's like a very real connection that's maybe harder than getting rid of someone you just met on the beach. It could be like, if they meet up again, it could get very ugly. They might feel like they can't get rid of each other, and then they have to sit next to each other at the end, even if it's not beneficial for their games.
Yeah, exactly. It raises so many, I guess that's one of the seeds that I'm looking forward to seeing grow, because it raises so many possibilities and a different dimension, because it's almost like it's not even quiet versus water, because you went in with no intention to be together, kind of thing. So that's really interesting. Something I wouldn't mind getting your opinion. What did you think on the strategical move by was Matt when he didn't pick Dave? So
yeah,
when he didn't pick him in the schoolyard pick, what did you think of that? Because initially my mind did change halfway through, but initially I thought, oh, if they're not on the same page and he's in the other tribe, this could really just blow out. So what did you think?
Well, my mind also sort of changed. I initially hated it, was like screaming at my TV. I don't know how you could pass up the opportunity to have a vote, you know, a second pair of eyes and ears. No one knows you're together. It wouldn't have been weird to pick Dave first. He's a very fit guy. And just to have that safety. Then I heard them talk about how and it was weird how they were so on the same page with us, and they had these two independent confessionals where they were like, we'll meet up later and we'll have this like secret alliance and no one will know about it. And that is pretty cool. But at the same time, it's pretty greedy. Like, what if you don't even make it to that swap? I think just take the ally, just assure yourself those first, you know, that first part of the game to have someone really close to you. But I don't hate it as much as I did, because that will be lethal if they get to a swap and have each other and no one knows. But I still think you're a risky player, Henry. I would be a very cautious player. I would take that ally just straight off the bat, but I see the other side of it now.
Yeah, I think that's why I changed mid. First, I was like, you've got someone in the corner straight away. That's so valuable. But then I was like, if this pays off, and a lot of people didn't like when I jumped ship, but the amount of information you can get when you've met all 24 or have an ear as close to you as a best friend, from all to get all 24's information, it is so powerful. Information is the power of Survivor. So I like the risk, but I am super surprised that they're both on the exact same page. They're almost confident with it, which to me is just like, you had no idea what they're thinking or saying. Like, it sounds a bit iffy that they're so well on the same page, but it's good. It could just be massive coincidence, but yeah, it'll be exciting to see. And then one might jump over if there's a switch up or whatever. Yeah. It's really exciting to see what'll come from it.
It's also just insane to me that production allowed that possibility to happen. Like, not only were there two people who knew each other, but then there was a schoolyard pick, and then Matt happened to be chosen as one of the captains. They must have been thinking, like, oh my God, and then he didn't choose Dave, which was hilarious to me. But I have to ask, shoe on the other foot of the other 16 contestants. Now, I think it'll be entertaining to watch one of them blindside each other. I do assume that they'll make it to a swap or a merge together just based on the fact that we've heard so much about it, so it must be relevant. If they run the game and make it to the final two or three, that'll feel very dodgy. Like, how would you feel if you got home from filming and found out, like, Luke and Jericho were mates from way back?
Oh, I'd be chill with you. I'd go to production and be like, I would be like, here's a rule book I signed. That is outrageous. I'd be pretty filthy. Even like I wasn't even a massive fan of flying over to Samoa with the same people in my thing. Because to me, I was like, when I hit that sand, I'm on. Like, I don't want anything. Like, I want it to be fair, because I know if in a fair environment, I can work my magic. I didn't want, you know, anything being done unfairly, because you can switch off at times. So before the game and stuff, if they're already building, they've already got a relationship, and then after you find that out, it would be, you wouldn't be happy.
Yeah, I think I would, if I was a contestant, and it depends how well they do, but if they run the game, if you come home and find out they're friends, you'd be livid.
We had
something similar in US Survivor, not to spoil anything, because you said you haven't watched since you got back, but it was two people who they didn't mention on the show, I think because CBS was so embarrassed that they let it slip through, but New Zealand Survivor is just like, it's fine. But CBS didn't tell us, but we found out through some other press, and she actually got rid of him like right at the beginning. So that was really interesting to watch. But they weren't nearly this close, I don't think. They were like college acquaintances, whereas these guys feel like very close in their own words. They said so. It's crazy to me.
Yeah. Crazy indeed.
Yeah. Matt and Dave watch is a real thing. We're going to be keeping an eye on that. So. So much was interesting about this challenge. Now, I just want to get it from you. So I know that you have a very loose approach to whether you need to win challenges. You definitely threw some, try to throw some.
Yep.
You get there day one, and there's a challenge. You don't know what the reward is. It's the first impression of you. It's an individual challenge. It is a challenge that you're even trying to win. And does not knowing the reward make you want it more or less? Because like that's risky not to win it if you don't know what it is. But it's also risky more to win it because you don't know what you're playing for.
Yeah, I'd say more. I always think, like, Token Teams, or however you pronounce it, was a good example of it. I always think, especially early, like, if something bad is to happen to you, like in Token Teams when you're first voted out, so say you won this thing, there's going to be a benefit to it. Was there a benefit to this one? Well, I personally do think there was, because you could pick your tribe and therefore who you could align with in the game. But, yeah, I would go hard for it. Even the thing that crossed my mind in my season when I jumped ship is that why would they, if two volunteers chose to jump ship, they got to be given something. So I thought we might get some sort of clue or something as well. So I always think that there is you go for the opportunities in Survivor, and I think winning that, you get a little power. And as you know, I love power in the game.
Yeah.
So I would have gone – having times where I would have gone hard. So that's how I approached it.
In saying that, Yos, whose name I pronounced so incorrectly through the preseason coverage, my apologies on that. But she won, and she doesn't even make it through the episode. And to me, it's crazy because it really reminds me of Survivor Palau again, where Jolanda was in the same position. Really reminded me of that, not just because I don't know whether to pronounce the names with a J and or a Y, but that's definitely part of it. But Jolanda, she won the individual immunity, which also allowed her to be the captain of the schoolyard pick. And then she did the exact same thing as Yos, where she was obviously an immediate threat. She fell into this leadership position that she was kind of put into and couldn't really get out of. She was threatening and it just didn't work. And then she also didn't make it through the episode. So it is weird to me that the two most similar situations, the exact same thing happened.
Yeah.
It might be different for men, but I do think that as a woman, to be in that leadership role, to be threatening, it just won't go well for you. If I, as a woman going there, it would be hard to want to win that. Obviously, the benefit of hindsight, I actually know what they were playing for, and it's hard to get off the bat and not try to win on day one.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
the fact of the matter is that both of those female winners from two very similar situations didn't make it another, you know, 50 minutes or another hour of Survivor. So it's definitely a conundrum for people to think about. But it's good to hear that you wouldn't have thrown the challenge, because I know that's something that you'll want to do.
Well, it's a good point you raise, because I know it sounds a bit arrogant or whatever, but me standing, like, I knew, if you can look at some people in this cast, you're like, they're a threat. They're a physical threat without them touching a challenge.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I assumed I'd be looked at. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't really matter if I dominated the challenge or not, even if I came last. Unless I was like breathing for air or whatever, like I was clearly unfit, I'm still a threat.
Yeah.
So I think for my position, that's why I love Survivor. So many different players have to play it differently. I would go for it, but you're right. Why did it happen to Yosei? So it's a really good point you make.
Maybe as a woman, you don't have that like really just like that massive, like, big hulking presence as a man might have, and you don't come across as you show more of your cards in a challenge where people, unless you look like super fit, which Yos was obviously really fit and she might not have looked like you do. So she showed her cards. But I do wonder, and we'll get into it a bit more when we talk about the vote itself, how much came down to her being a threat and then how much was just like a personality clash. But we'll talk more about that later on when we talk about the vote. In terms of the pick itself, I thought it was fairly, like, there weren't massive surprises for me. The biggest surprise for me was that Tara, who's the oldest woman in the game, I don't know if you know this, Henry, but the oldest man is 32, and that's JT. It's a very young cast.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and then there's only three people who are older than that, which is Lisa, who's 38, Kyla, who's 37, and Tara, who's 44. So she's, like, a good 15 to 20 years older than most of these people. And I thought that she was going to come in with just, like, a massive demographic gap that she couldn't bridge, and then she was the first woman picked, and she did really well throughout the episode as well.
Yeah, she kind of, like, I don't mind the pick, because I would work with, she kind of reminds me of Jackie in my season, a bit older lady. Yeah, so obviously, and Matt's got the long hair too, so
I've heard a lot of comparisons of you to Matt. That's definitely something we'll get into with the questions.
Yeah, so for me, elite, like she, it's great that she's coming across as strong and physical. And then when she says her age, I don't think anyone will care.
Yeah.
Yeah, the schoolyard pick for me seemed pretty stock standard, but you're right. The demographics, especially in the males, it's very, you know, you can kind of grab a couple in your hand and they're kind of the same.
Yeah.
The same person, and also a bit different in this opening episode compared to US or even Australian Survivor. I didn't really get much backstory about any of them, so I was always looking under their name for their occupation and stuff. So I think that also added to how you could kind of group a lot of the guys in the same bracket, which, you know, you love the different ages and the different personalities. So I'm hoping as the season goes on, it kind of separates, even though they're similar ages.
Yeah, well, it's something that US Survivor has done a lot of recently, and that's sacrificing a bit of diversity for these younger, energetic, millennial-type people. And I don't know if that's something that Survivor New Zealand, like, explicitly modelled their game on, but it's very similar to what we're watching for Survivor US in Ghost Island, where they're all, we call it Survivor Millennials versus Millennials, like, they're all so young. I think they thought, or maybe they hoped, that these young people would come in and be really cutthroat and strategic and just like bring a really like extra dimensional life to the game. But I do love seeing those, that extra diversity. So it's hard to miss out on it. But just talking now about like moving into some of the people who are doing really well and really badly, because talking about Tara, I mean, she did amazing because she really played into that mum archetype. You know, I'm gonna go, I went on the record last week and I called her my first boot, and she did so much better than I thought she would do, and she had a really positive attitude. She leaned into that mum role. She called herself like camp mum or something, and she was part of that core five by the end of the episode. Even though they didn't go to tribal, she seemed to be in a really good spot. To me, it was a really, really strong contrast with Carla, who's the oldest person on the other tribe at the age of 37. Crazy.
Yeah.
But she's like a mum. She's a step grandma. So she is in that mother role. She was picked last where Tara was picked first. So there's obviously that psychological difference, but it seemed to just derail her game. She did get votes. She didn't go home, but she wasn't in that core five. She was having a really hard start to the game. I think that she was just overwhelmed by her demographic place in the tribe, having been picked last and all those things. So I thought it was really interesting to see how they both handle that so differently.
It's a really good point.
And you say that Tara reminds you of Jackie, who was obviously one of your absolute closest allies through the first part of Australian Survivor. How do you, because it's so hard to be an older woman. I say older, but these people are in their 30s and 40s. But to be in that older woman demographic on Survivor is really, really tough. You say you would want to play with someone like that, and obviously you did. How did Jackie, because Jackie was in such a good position with you, like how did she come in with that position and just make it work so well for her, do you think?
Yeah, it's interesting when you put it that way. She's clearly, Jackie clearly comes across fit. So does Tara. They both come across fit. So physically you're like, all right, straight away the age thing doesn't really matter. But Jackie has kids my age and a lot of our ages. She related very well with all of us. And she just got that kind of personality, which is a bit out there, which I think you need to kind of have that to kind of, and she made sure she was part of the younger group in a sense. So she, you know, she was like doing the RAS and being saying like Mama Jack and stuff, kind of similar to Tara, but it wasn't like, oh, she's, you know, the mom, she's the older one that, you know, we don't really need. She was really good and really good at investing in people's conversations and getting to know them. So, I can, you know, that's probably out of the whole cast, I can see from my season and their season, probably the biggest similarity.
For sure. I mean, Tara and Matt aren't aligned at this stage, but I guess those are some of the parallels that people are seeing. But yeah, I really see a lot of Jackie and Tara now, and I'm glad I was proven wrong that she did so much better than I expected. Just talking now about some other people who did well. We mentioned JT and Dylan, who I think were some of the strategic standouts. What I love from JT, who I was so wrong about so many things last week. I said JT was my favorite preseason. He was so funny, but I said he could
Really? That's good.
Yeah. He also said that he could be a train wreck, because I just thought some of these people are so fit and outdoorsy, and he will tell you himself that he's more of like the indoor nerdy guy. I don't know if he used the word nerdy, but he knows what's up. And just the way he came in, he and Dylan were both so fine with being picked really close to the bottom or last in Dylan's point of view. They were like, yeah, expected it. In fact, JT was like, this was a good thing because I was second to last. How unthreatening am I right now? And then I thought it was so interesting that they went and created these alliances in very similar ways, which was that they didn't just get five people together on day one out of like fear and desperation. They went about it. They were perceptive. They were really analytical and they found people they thought they could really work with. You know, JT found people who were looking for idols. He's like, these are my people. You know, then he found people who were really willing to have those strategic conversations and he made a group of people he thought he could really work with. You know, Dylan did a similar thing where he found people who he thought were isolating himself in sort of that bro group. And then he realized that Tessa. Yeah, that was great. And he thought Tessa maybe could be a part of that. And he kind of got a misfit alliance around that. You know, what was your strategy when you got there on day one? And how did you find the people you thought you could work really well with?
Yeah, similar in a way to JT. I think Dylan said it best when he went to, who was it? It was
Keisha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And said, let's be this tight too, and we'll build around us. So I went up, a lot of it wasn't seen, but I went up to Sarah, Sam, and then Jackie and stuff and built this tight too with these people because I think a tight too is so powerful in the game, but I wanted to have multiple ones. And then we kind of at the start had this kind of alliance. So with all these people kind of built up. But I reckon my first alliance conversation was within an hour of the beach, like, and then the next one was an hour and 5 minutes, and then it's an addiction. Like, it's ridiculous. It's like you switch on and you're like, you know, go hard or go home. And that's what I loved about JT and Dylan. Just like you said, just straight away figured out who they could work with. You got to pick a balance. It's hard because I wanted to pick who I could take to the end with and beat. So it's hard to pick someone that's a weak player early on that the tribe still wants to keep around that you can beat later. So it's a different dynamic. So like JT kind of went down the road like Jared did in mine. He played with people around him that all had the same kind of mindset. I kind of wanted to go down like the Jackie and Kent, who weren't the biggest survivor know-it-alls. And, you know, I thought I could talk my way to a win at the end. So that's our little differences, but I, you know, it's a lot easier to, you know, strategize and look for idols when you have those people around you that are keen as well. It's just when it comes down to that final five, you know, it's going to be tricky.
Yeah. I mean, maybe a bit of a difference is that they're those like super fan, you know, nerdy archetypes and you were more of like the physical Aussie Malcolm archetype. I hate equating Malcolm and Aussie, but I just did. So maybe they felt more that they needed like a really strong safety net of people they really needed, even if it would be more difficult towards the end, where you maybe had that room to kind of pick and choose who you wanted because you weren't really in danger early on.
Yeah, that's a fantastic point. And now just re-remembering about what they both said about that was second to last. Like, you're exactly right. That's a huge point. And also, another thing I touched on is with that schoolyard pick, they both already got evidence. If they didn't, they're in a tribe, they wouldn't think they're on the bottom. They might think they're near the bottom. Mm-hmm. That schoolyard pick told them they're on the bottom. Mm-hmm. And even if it's by one person making the pick, everyone looks at you as on the bottom. So the way JT just said, this is perfect, means he switched on. He wants to be that kind of quiet assassin and go about it that way. And then, you know, I also liked what Lisa said. One of the grabs was how she's like, I want to play quiet. And then at the end, which is tricky, to try and show them all. And that is Survivor. Yeah. So for me, I wanted my moves to be known. I was swinging from the start and I knew if I got to the end, it would be a piece of cake to get the check.
Mm-hmm.
But it obviously got me voted out earlier. So, you know, I like the ballsy out there playing, but you know, for an actual really good Survivor player, I think JT and Dylan really started well for both of their tribes.
Well, I guess you do have to play to your archetype and how people are going to perceive you. So everyone comes in differently and obviously you would have a different path to the end than someone like Lisa, who could be a little bit more hidden and there. But then she has the problem of now I need people to see it and believe that I really did this. Mm. But I'm going to talk about Lisa in a second, but while we're on the JT thing, the best part about this was definitely Liam's amazing confessional, and I hope that this is a sign of how much fun the editors are going to have this season. We're getting a lot. I said in the preseason, Jason Siska vibe, so I feel very, very vindicated about that. People are saying, like, the Christie brothers. Oh, my God. I understand. Okay, I actually don't really understand, but I get it more when you're saying there's no strategy happening on day one or two. But then they went to Tribal Council, and I feel like you still had these thoughts. Like, did you play with anyone? What do you think of this type of player who literally doesn't think that any conversations are happening on Survivor?
Oh, that was so funny. Like, bless him. Like, how old is he?
I think 23.
I'll find out. 23.
He comes so across as quite young.
Is he the youngest out there?
Actually, Yost might have been, but if he's not, I think they were both 23, so he would have been youngest or second youngest, yeah.
Yeah, it's so tough out there. But, yeah, some people do actually just focus on, you know, trying to get shelter up and food and think, why would you bother before it happens? You don't think it is. As a fan, you're probably looking, when he was saying that, you're probably screaming at the TV being like, it's Survivor, come on, do something, figure it out. But it was just so funny, those confessionals. It was just, I'm making moves. And he's like, no one's making moves. It was classic.
It was amazing.
But, yeah, I think age is a big thing. It as well.
Yeah.
So being the youngest, you kind of, yeah, some things might, you know, just you might miss a few things. And yeah, like I said, the ones that made moves did it really quietly and looks like they've clearly got away with it.
I think you're being a bit kind to him there. I mean, this was bad and I need to look at the exact, they didn't show us all the votes, but I got it off Survivor Wikipedia.
I on podcast, so, you know, I got a feel for a few of them.
Fair enough. That's fine.
Like, in a way, like, imagine, I'm sure he's a fan. You're going out there. I remember my first day, I was like, oh, my God, I'm on Survivor. But you should have those ideas come into your head that you should always be thinking what other people are thinking. So,
yeah,
you're right. He did look a bit silly, but, hey, he's still in. At least he didn't go.
Yeah, well, we'll see if this is a bit of a wake-up call for him or if it's just his general mentality. I got some of the votes off Survivor Wikipedia, which I'm just going to take as gospel, much like Andrew Savage did. He was one of the three that voted for Carla. So I'm not quite sure if it was like a split vote that the whole tribe was doing or if he was actually left out of the vote. But that confessional and just some of the stuff he was saying even late into the episode, it's not a good look. Definitely not a good look. But what were you saying?
Oh, no, I was like, especially with that core five kind of being telling us about the core five, kind of indicated that it might not have been a split. It might have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one thing is that Aaron, who was part of that five, also voted for Carla. And because we didn't get.
Oh.
Yeah. It's very weird. But, well, I mean, yeah, he did vote for Carla, but. Oh. We didn't get that pre-tribal context so much. So it's hard to know if they just didn't have time to tell him or if it was a split. We didn't get enough of that. But that's just the one thing where I think it wasn't necessarily just the core five and maybe was a split, but I'm just speculating. I have no idea. Something else, just the last thing on the Liam scene, which I just loved so much, was that there was this dodo music, which I've seen a lot of, but usually I see it when someone like Stephen Fishback can't break a stick, you know? I very rarely see it like, you're missing out on the strategy. And I love that the Survivor editing department and the music department was shaming him for not strategizing. Like, that's the season of Survivor I want to watch. Like, get out there and strategize.
Exactly. Oh, just say, if he's got that music already, it sounds like it's going to stay on par.
Yeah.
I think he's going to keep missing a few things, but yeah, it'd be so interesting to see.
Yeah. Another really interesting dichotomy, like the JT Liam thing, was, and we kind of touched on it before, but Lisa being the super fan of all super fans. I mean, she says she watched Survivor Thailand multiple times. More power to you. I could only get through that season once. And then Tessa, who hasn't watched like even an episode before coming out. And now the show's put that narrative out into the show where one of those perspectives has to win out. Do you think that someone does have to have, like, a lot of Survivor knowledge to do well? Is that an opinion you have, or what do you think about it?
I don't think you do.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really hard. I think comparing our 55-day game to a 39-day game is a bit tricky.
Mm-hmm.
But it helps to know, but Oh no, it definitely helps to know. But yeah, I could see. It depends who. Like, if Tess gets to the end, it depends who sits next to. There's so many elements to Survivor about, you know, betraying people and voting them off and getting them in the jury that, you know, a person who's never watched it and probably didn't do a strategic thing, we've seen people win the game when they've barely been strategic and then kind of put their name to things at the end. So, you know, it's going to be interesting, but it's kind of like the real fan versus that everyone, you know, the thousand people that applied are in Lisa's camp. And then we got Tess here who doesn't know a thing. And then if she just pulls off some move to get rid of Lisa or something, and then she's just like, oh, I barely watched Survivor. I don't even like this show. The fans are going mental. It'll be classic. But
yeah,
it's always interesting because as a fan, you can't – it's kind of – I don't know. It's not a slap in the face, but you're like, well, why do you want to be out there if you haven't really watched it?
Yeah.
Like, I get it's an experience, but that's the least fun. Like, yeah. You want to play the game. You want to do the challenge. Like, there's, you know, that it's not a frustration thing for me, but it's kind of like, yeah, it's an interesting dynamic between Tess and Lisa. But you're right. Someone's going to win that little battle.
Yeah. I mean, I'm obviously a massive super fan, and I'd love to sit here and say you have to know the game to do well. But I know that's not true. You know, I know that people who've barely seen any of it have won. I know that people who've seen all of it have won. I know that you could be a train wreck from either side of the aisle. So I don't think that you necessarily need to know the game to do well. But now I'm really hoping that Lisa wins out over Tessa, because now they've put that dichotomy out there in the universe, and they're either going to, you know, validate the point of you need to be a Survivor superfan to really have a leg up in this game with Lisa. Or if Tessa somehow does better than Lisa, then they're telling the audience that you do really well by not watching Survivor. Like, that's a very weird message to send to the audience.
Yeah, it's super weird. If anything, like, this is massive crystal ball, and then in the future, I'm just suddenly got this picture of Tess sitting at the final two or three and Lisa just absolutely tearing into her because she hadn't watched Survivor in her whole day and she just coasted the way through. That just came to my head then. But there would be definitely some sort of story with the two, which is...
It has to play out.
Obviously, didn't get into much, but Lisa is one to watch and very interesting.
Yeah, I loved her in that scene. I love that she was so incredulous. She was like, how could you not have watched Survivor? Like, Lisa, I totally agree. How could you not watch Survivor in general and also before going actually on the show, but just in general as well? It's the best show. Start watching Survivor. Yeah, come on, Tessa.
It's so good.
And just on the other side of the coin, who would you rather play with, like a Tessa who's never seen anything or a Lisa who knows everything about the game?
Tess, for sure.
Really? Why is that?
Anyone that I can beat at the end, whether it be... I play the game as get rid of the threats. A lot of people don't like that strategy because they believe in shields and stuff, and that's so fair. But for me, I want to do the hard work early and cruise to the end. And it didn't work out, so do not trust me. But I just think looking at Tess, you don't want to, like, understand you want to work with people that understand the game and do it like this. But you could say an awesome strategy, dumb it down for Tess, and she'll vote with you.
Yeah.
So you've got to vote. Like, if you've got five super fans that are all in one alliance, it's so hard to put your name on that move. Like, you don't, like, I remember so many times when I was playing, like, oh, it was like, all right, your move next time. It's like, people like, oh, she really wants to claim this move, so let's let her have it. It's like a power struggle because, like, probably like this season, they really want the strategy to be lifted up. We were constantly told by Jonathan and stuff about you guys are going to be strategic, like the strategy is up, blah, blah, blah. Everyone wants those names to put on their list. So with someone like Tess, you're going to be like, hey, Tess, we're voting for this one. You're going to orchestrate it. You're going to put it in place and she's going to vote with you and she's going to be like, sweet, I'm on an island. I'm doing Survivor.
Yeah.
I'll work with Tess.
Yeah, and I think it was true for Australian Survivor as well, but there's definitely a very big disparity between how much people know about the show, and obviously Lisa and Tess are like the obvious extremes of it, but the whole cast is kind of like down the spectrum, I think, and it will be interesting to me to see some of the strategic threats and some of the big fans. Do they work together? I mean, obviously Dylan, he was already with Lisa, for example, but are they going to work together? Or obviously they're going to have to cut each other at some point, but when? Like, for me, yeah. I would love to see JT and Dylan, because they thought about the strategy so similarly and were kind of kindred spirits yeah. in that regard. I'd love to see them get on the same tribe and really, like, run the game together. But are they going to really, like, see each other as, like, the funhouse mirror versions of themselves and try yeah. and take each other out? So it'll be interesting to see the fans' approach on, do they get rid of these, you know, non-super fans or just casuals or yeah. people who have not seen a lot of the show, you know, as wild cards, basically, or do they use them as numbers? And at what point through the game does that change?
Yeah, that's exciting. I agree.
Yeah. So just, you know, talking a bit more about the tribe dynamics in general. So both tribes had these JT and Dylan-led alliances of 5 of 9. So on Kang Chao, I think it is, Kang Chao, it's Dylan, Keisha. So they're like the two at the center of that yeah. alliance. It actually reminded yep. me a lot of you and Jackie at the center of like a bigger alliance. Yep. And I yep. think that they're really worried about being a power couple. We saw them saying, like,
yeah,
let's not
I loved
talk.
What I said.
Yeah. How would you say they would minimize that threat, obviously, as someone who was part of a couple of power couples
yeah,
in their time
yeah.
in the game?
I think Keisha said it's almost like one. That kind of rules tactic that I think Boston Rob kind of implied, like mm-hmm. the system, you need a system. So exactly, they said, yep, we're together. Boom, let's make sure we see, go out one-on-one with other people. And if one thing, you know, I mean, Jackie got found out because we would get watered together a lot, mm-hmm. but you don't need a long conversation with your ally.
Yeah.
You say, here's the next one. Like, and but the thing I struggled with was actually like spending time with some of the others one-on-one, like, it did my head in at times. So I think it was really good that they're like, bang, they sorted out, they're on the same page. Even I thought it was so good that you knew it was a solid alliance, because I think Dylan suggested it and then straight away Keisha put her hand out. So to me, I know this is a teeny thing, but to me it was like he suggested it, she grabbed it straight away, boom. Like that to me was like they're in it together. And then how they were just like, all right, boom, boom, they knew straight away the threat level of a power couple. So I think if they can, you know, work with other people as in just go get water, go hang out, go have a laugh with, then that'll be fine.
Yeah, and it seems to be good that they're like instantly aware of it and like really monitoring that relationship and how it's perceived. So there yeah. was Tara and Lisa who we discussed. And then this was funny to me because they were like deciding between Tess and Adam. Yeah. And I love Adam as a character. I was like, please choose Adam, please. Yeah. So they put Adam in as the fifth. What do you think of Adam? Like, we didn't see much of him strategically, but he's a character. Like, he's probably the biggest character out there. And I don't know if I've
yeah.
ever seen another contestant much like Adam. Like, he's such a unique character.
Yeah, he's got that kind of just that charisma that you just love. Like, you want to see more of. And without a doubt, he's my favorite character. Along with JT, but yeah, he's just got this great energy. He's always smiling. It's so hard to smile out there. I just absolutely love his energies, and I think the tribe love him, and it's not in an annoying way at all, I don't think. They all seem to enjoy it. But I also see like a bit of a – I think he knows the game. I think he will get a bit underrated in terms of like a little bit like Luke in our season. It was a bit underrated because he just had that personality, that joke, that fun-loving guy. But I reckon he can switch it on like Luke did when he wants to and go strategy. I think there was a little moment where I was like, oh, he's going to go look for idols or something.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was just talking about how he's just going to get water or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think he has more to bring than just his great personality. I think he's also one I'm looking forward to see where he's going. And just a quick one on the difference between the fives. It's interesting how JT initially, you know, found that number 2 and 3 and 4, but it wasn't like the two of Keisha and Dylan. So
yeah.
I think Keisha and Dylan are going to be seen as this two power couple. And I think JT is kind of running that far.
Yeah, he's like a solo operator in the middle
yeah,
of it all.
I think he's really in control of that five, and something's, you know, he's in a really good solo spot, I think.
Yeah.
So that was just an interesting difference, I thought.
Yeah, I also love that he made a connection because he saw Aaron, I think, kind of having a bit of a sneaky look for the idol firstly, Aaron, I thought was going to be non-strategic at all. And I was impressed that he seemed, he got, instantly got in the five. He was, you know, interested in Idol. So he was better than my expectations. But I love that he found people he thought could really connect with him on that strategic level. But back to Adam for 1 second, because are you aware of what Adam did preseason? It's something I have to talk about and I will talk about forever. Okay. Yeah. And I have to get your opinion as someone who had an aggressive preseason strategy in pretending to be a yoga teacher.
Yeah.
So Adam did something a little bit different to that. He got a large amount of Botox in his forehead to try and mask his like disapproving and like judgmental frown, like specifically to mask that social part of the game. What do you think about this move as someone who's, you know, had one of the most famous preseason moves ever?
I just, that kind of, hearing that, I'm like, this guy's sweet shot. Like, we only saw the fun loving side. He's going to come to play, in my opinion.
I love that you love that.
To me, to me, it's like, if you know Survivor, so you got to think, what can you take before the show?
Mm-hmm.
And what can you take with you to help you. You've got to be thinking before you're even on the stand. I was a yoga instructor. I also made a fake immunity necklace, which I broke down into braces and stuff. So there's so many things that you've got to think about. What can I bring out there? And then you kind of think, what is out there that'll work to me and work against me? And he obviously saw his frown as something that would, you know, get people not to like him or whatnot. I just absolutely love it because especially early on, you take the smallest things and you'll vote someone out because you don't want it to be you.
Mm-hmm.
So, and just that commitment, like, you would know, Shannon, that, like, you get a chance to play Survivor, your mind is going to be going a million miles an hour and you're going to be thinking, what advantage can I get? And if you can get any kind of advantage for even getting out there, that's huge.
Yeah.
Like, it's so big. So whether it works or not, that to me, it doesn't really matter. The way he's thinking is what matters, and I really like it.
Yeah, and I, you know, I was looking to see how it was going to be on the island. It wasn't, like, distracting, but it was pretty shiny, his forehead, I have to say.
It was shiny. It was beautiful.
And that's why. So that's Keisha Dillon, Adam Lee, Satara. They're in the five. They didn't go to tribal, and I'm not sure if they will for a while because they seem really strong.
Yeah.
So they've got Josh, Matt, and Brad, who are kind of like the bros, and then Tess on the outside of that. So that'll be interesting to watch if those alliances hold.
Yeah.
And then obviously on Chani, which did go to tribal, you've got JT, Eve, Aaron, Dave, and Frankie, and they were against Renee, who we didn't see a lot of. Yost, who's gone now, Liam and Carla, and we saw them all being on the outs in their own way, not in a way that they seem really connected to each other, but in a way that they just weren't like in that core group. And so they obviously went to tribal first. You know, you were someone who went to the first tribal council. What's your perspective of going in, you know, the first 3 days and you have to head to tribal? Like, what's your objective there? What would their objective have been?
As I was watching, I was like, oh, USA, sorry if I get the name wrong.
It's very hard.
I was like, don't worry about the leader. Everyone overrates the leader. I'm like, I get it. It's Survivor folklore that everyone talks about not wanting to be the leader. But to me, the real worry is don't go on the puzzle in the first episode. That's, to me, the thing you should be worried about. You just want to go into a position where you can just be part of the team. So if anyone's playing, I would say first challenge, just don't do the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
But USA was great in the challenge. And she, yeah, had that leader kind of role and then went home. So, yeah, it's the first one, you just don't have to be you.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, that's the power to JT because it was, well, we don't really know, do we, where the votes went and why, if it was a split or not. But mm-hmm. if you can have a confidence into round one, we were still a bit like we kind of split and then we went to rocks and we had the majority. Like it was a bit messy ours. Like it's, we did have three more people, but still it's messy that first one. You're nervous. You just don't want it to be you. So, yeah, I think to me, I was more thinking, well, just don't do the puzzle, girl. You can lead. Like it's a bit overrated. Like I understand there have been first books like that, but yeah, I was a bit surprised, but
yeah,
she went.
Well, assuming that the vote, like the two only options really were Carla and Yost, who were the only two to get votes, like, do you think it was the right move to take out someone who seemed really strong over Carla, who was kind of struggling and maybe was a bit weaker, but did you think that that was the right move for them?
No, I don't, to be honest. I would have, yeah, taken Carla out. You know, you've then also, if people want to play with shields, you still got your say to be that shield. If she's still going to lead and annoy or whatever, it's going to continue. Mm. So then you've got one and two ducks kind of lined up. And you're right, like, she dominated that part in the challenge, didn't she?
Yeah. Well, she was great. She won the first challenge. Like, she was obviously a pretty big physical presence.
Yeah, so you do obviously need to keep your tribe strong. So, yeah, I'm a bit surprised why.
Yeah.
But, hey, you know, I'm surprised why, because I feel Carla would have had to make it a more of a connection than what was shown with maybe JT or someone else in there to be like, I don't know, maybe it was just JT didn't have all that control and everyone's like, oh, that one's kind of annoying. She's the leader. Let's all go her. I don't know. It was interesting.
For me, I'm like, yeah. It depends. It depends on why they voted her out, because someone said at the end, you know, you were too big of a threat. If that's why they voted her out, I don't like it. I mean, it's episode one. You can get rid of the threats even a little bit later, even if it's still the pre-merge. But episode one seems like really premature for someone who's really strong on your tribe. So if they voted her out for being like a leader or for being a threat, I don't love the move. But then she also had a scene where Frankie was talking about how she basically just kept talking and was annoying. So if it was just a thing of she doesn't fit in socially, it just isn't, you know, gelling in that social way, which is something that's really hard to translate to the viewers. You know, if it wasn't that she was a threat and it was just that she wasn't fitting in, then I get why they did it. You know, you want to be a cohesive group. If it's not working out that someone is gelling with the rest of the tribe, I totally get why they would do it. But she did seem really strong, and that tribe does seem weaker. So it's probably a rough road ahead for them in terms of challenges.
Yeah, it's a great point you make. It's if you're going to go for a threat, well, why don't you take out, you know, who's one of the blokes or so? You know, if you're going to take out a threat, take one out, take a name. Like, don't just say it. But then again, when you're in that first thing, you kind of want to, as a player, you know, you're on TV, you kind of want to be like, oh, I'm going to claim this one. You know what I mean?
Yeah, a bit of big move-itis. It could have been that.
Yeah.
Because that was a blindside. Carla might not have been a blindside. They probably just wanted to make a blindside.
Yeah, exactly. They could have wanted to just be like, boom, we're in control. And, yeah, and maybe they thought Yosei could wiggle a bit better than Carla once she found out. So, and get in. But, yeah, I think you're right. It could be a long stretch of losses. But, we'll find out, I guess.
Yeah, and I did read today that a few of the contestants called her after the season to apologize. I'm like, these Kiwis are so nice. Like, it's just so funny to me that they're all so nice. But, you know, be strategic and ruthless in the game and then call after to apologize. That's a good way of looking at it, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I got a letter from someone saying that they were surprised why I didn't show enough empathy after the game. So,
really?
These New Zealanders are really nice. Yeah, long story, another day. Nah, it's all good. It's all good now. But, I treat game like game. No apologies needed. But, yeah, the Kiwis are very nice.
Yeah, they're just a nicer culture than we are, I think, and definitely than the US are. So we can't even fathom that level of kindness. So now that we've discussed the move, I do want to do a weekly award. Stephen Fishback has the Fishy for the best player. Nikai Danza had the Danzy. I'm not naming an award after myself because I'm not important, but I am going to give the Chizzy.
There you are.
No, well, I haven't played Survivor. I'm not creating an award after myself, but I am going to do the Chizzy for Matt Chisholm, where I'm going to award the best player of the week every week, because that's something I always enjoy in the international coverage. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts. I think we're on a similar page. For me, it was very much between JT and Dylan. You know, they had that very similar strategy. They both really accepted being picked low down on the totem pole, and then they maximized their opportunities from that. And they were shown as the real strategic instigators of each tribe. For me, yep. I'm going to give it to JT just because he happened to go to Tribal Council and was able to actually put that into practice. And we saw that he did create a blindside from that and his five were in power. But those two would be the top. And so JT, the first ever Chizzy, congrats.
Beautiful, yeah. I think that's a ripper. If I was going to do a little 3-2-1 vote, he would get my three. Dylan would get my two. And I would give the cheeky one to Matt just because I think that initial bold move of not choosing your mate from back home could really pay off down the track.
Great. And I love that you're doing the 3-2-1. For our international listeners, that's how they judge in football games. So that's an Aussie thing. Maybe I should start doing that for the
Chizzy. Three votes, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so my next segment, which I want to do as a bit of a weekly thing, is what I call, it's a bit of a tongue twister, Chizzimisms. These are Matt moments from Matt Chizzim where he just does like really strange and funny things that I just want to call attention to every week. Chizzimisms is what it's called. I'm making it a thing.
I like it.
Some funny things from this week was, okay, I don't know if anyone else noticed this but me, but when he did the, you know, 18 people, you know, one survivor whole thing, his legs were just like very far apart. I was like, he's standing so awkwardly. And just like some of the things he says, the inflection is on such a strange word. It kind of makes me feel like he's like a survivor robot who's just like saying things in this really strange way. I love him, but I just was laughing at all these moments in a loving way. The fact that he kept calling in the reward challenge, he's like, right into the drink. I love that. Yeah. That was so funny.
It's more Aussie than us.
And speaking of Aussie, he said hard yakka. Some of these US viewers must have been like, what?
What is going on?
And he called the idol old mate idol.
I heard that. Yeah. I was like, oh, that's so funny.
Another thing I found really funny and is my last Chizzimism is that when he went to do the puzzle in the first challenge and he was counting it, he like counted all the numbers and they're all just standing there waiting for him to count to 100. And like in my mind, I was hoping that, you know, a few people before had thought they maybe got it right and they just cut it from the broadcast where he had to like go count to 100 a few times and then was like 84, 86, you're wrong. And they just watched him like count over and over again. I'm like, are we going to sit here and watch him count to 100?
He counted so quick.
He did.
I was like, oh my God. But surely just like,
US Survivor doesn't have enough time to show like the mass counting, but we do have 20 extra minutes in New Zealand Survivor, so we can get that aspect of it. Okay, Chizzimisms is a thing, and it'll probably be my hashtag today because I'm making it a thing. Now
I like it.
That we get to the, we've gotten to like the end of the strategy of the episode, I do have some questions from the listeners for you, Henry. We got so many questions. People were so excited to talk to you and to talk about the episode. So I've got a few questions for you if you want to answer.
Yeah, cool. Oh, of course.
The first question is not from a listener, actually. It's my question because it's my show, so I decided to ask mine first.
Yates is up first.
Yeah. So this wasn't something that we saw in the episode, but it was a really big thing preseason. And as you said, we got very little personal content in the episode, which was a disappointment. Yeah. And I do hope we get a lot of that, you know, in the ensuing episodes. So coming into this season, there are so many people we spoke about in the preseason who had just some incredible hardships and trials and tribulations right before coming out. For example, Josh had cancer the year before playing. Tara lost her dad 5 weeks before playing. Some people had different medical issues and surgery.
Tara,
yeah. She lost her dad 5 weeks before. And obviously you're someone who came in with a similar situation with your mom that Tara has.
Definitely.
You know, you're right in the place where you can talk about it. How do you think that might affect their games going forward? I mean, I know it's broad and everyone reacts differently, but from your perspective, how do you think that that could affect it?
I guess from my opinion, I can never put myself in their shoes, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
It's for Tara, who sounds pretty similar to my case. It's really tough. And I think it'd be really tough being a mum as well, because I found the hardest part was not being able to grieve with my family and thinking about my family grieving by themselves. So I knew I was out there because that's where they wanted me to be.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm the kind of person that, you know, obviously is all about my family. So being a mum on top of that, so much strength she's already showing. In terms of game, It can get you. It can definitely take you out of the game for a bit. I noticed after I got my letters and stuff, I was kind of getting this kind of, I'm super proud of how I played, where I'm at, what I've done, and, you know, whether or not, I'm not saying it did or not, but it might have made me switch off a little bit. And, you know, there was there was information coming my way about my vote off, but 100% got blindsided. But I know at the same time as well that I was pretty kind of at a place where, like you saw my exit, I was very happy to go. So it can kind of make you look at life and kind of accept that you're already on Survivor. You've really had a good game. And I think Tara, you know, hopefully she can go the whole time, but it's really tough. And I can just, the added element of having her children and stuff, missing their granddad or however they call him, is really tough, and so much credit and strength to her. And it's so tricky because it's really hard when you come home as well. So I'm just sending my love and thoughts to them. And Josh, obviously, great. So he's got rid of cancer, I assume. And
he's in remission.
To play, that's great news. And, you know, for him, I reckon he's probably got this new lease on life, and he seems just a happy kind of guy. So he really relishes it. And, you know, he might go out just absolutely nothing to lose, but I can't really speak for how Josh will do, but probably more Tara. But without a doubt, like, it's tough out there. It's so much tougher when you've had those hardships through life. Yes, in a sense, you need them to handle the hardship of Survivor itself, but being so recent, so soon, they will definitely cast their minds back home often. And, I'm just rambling now, but yeah, there's so much respect and love for them. And I can just kind of understand that it is hard. And a lot of people are still looking back, don't know how I did it. Like, I'm so proud of what I did. So I'm so proud of them for going out, because it's super tough.
Yeah, I mean, Survivor's tough at the best of times. And some of these people, much like yourself, Henry, are so brave. They've probably, again, much like yourself, had these dreams for so long. And with the international versions like we have, you can't really put it off. You know, this might be your last chance. And, you know, there've been some small examples in the US version. There was a woman who lost her son, and she did put off going one season, but then she went the season after, and it was still so hard for her, and she was first boot. I'm talking about Tina Shear. But, otherwise, you know, if you were in the US, you might be able to just put it off. But a lot of us Aussies and Kiwis, we don't know if there's going to be another season, and we've been waiting as fans for so long to play. And I have so much respect, obviously, for you and some of these other people who've gone through just tremendously hard things, and then still go out there and play and show that strength. And I don't know what Tara's doing in terms of telling people about her dad. I know for a fact that Josh is going, well, he said in the preseason that he's going to be keeping the cancer thing to himself while he needs to. And I know that was something that you largely did with your mother, which makes it even harder.
Does. And that's the thing. Mom was, you know, it was a mixture of things. Part strategy, I wanted to use it strategy as well. But I just, you know, if I heard my story, if I was sitting at the end, I would be like, well, I want him to have $500,000. Like, I knew the threat that could come with it. I'm sure that's what Josh might be thinking. Unfortunately, people just look at anything that, you know, that could give them a threat level. So I can understand Josh keeping it to himself. And with Tara being so soon, you can't really. I had the plan going in. I wouldn't tell anyone. I told one person, but it wasn't. It could change. It could change out there. Like, so for Tara, if she wants to keep it to herself, she doesn't. She doesn't, then changes her mind, like, completely. Whatever.
Yeah, situational.
It's so situational. So I guess it has more effect on how she'll be out there than, I guess, strategically, but it does play a part.
Yeah, of course. And obviously, you know, so much respect and love to them doing that. And obviously to you who went through it, it's just absolutely crazy to do that. Yeah. All right. Let's transition from that deep and meaningful conversation we just had to some more silly questions from the listeners. Okay. So Dylan Conrad, who is actually on the season, he's Dylan from the season. This is his question. He said, he said, who is your favorite of the man buns? Like, there are 9 men on the cast, and I think 4 of them have man buns, and Liam is tracking that way. 4.5 of the men have man buns. I don't know if this is something that the Kiwis are like emulating, where in, you know, Australian and US survivors, a lot of the fan favorites like yourself and Malcolm and Joey Amazing have the man buns, and maybe they just wanted to just specifically cast that aesthetic archetype. Mm-hmm. But who's your favorite of, I think it's, so it's Brad, Aaron, Matt, then there's Liam, and and Adam. Well, he's also a man bun as well.
Yeah, well, I was told in production before I knew I was getting on after not to cut my hair specifically.
Like Samson.
So kind of got an indication I might have been a chance, but I knew I couldn't cut my hair. So that's a good question. I don't know. I guess Matt, I don't know why there's so much hair around. There's plenty in our season two. It's a nightmare out there, that's for sure. you'll lose half of it, and probably just Matt, but that's not based on his man bun at all, probably just the kind of strategy he's playing. But yeah, it's a lot of hair.
A lot of people were comparing you to Matt. I got this question from Mark Percy, who said, is Matt a wannabe Henry or related, as they look very similar? So you're clearly seeing that, at least aesthetic similarity, and also the fact that he made quite a big move in not choosing Dave. You're seeing that parallel to him with yourself?
Yeah, I guess. I'm a massive, I don't really want to, I like looking at the cast as their own players, but I know we can't, and we're on a podcast, which is all about that. So I can see, you know, he kind of has those 3 kind of aspects that I think I kind of had, which is physical, strategic, and social. Out of the cast. Also, just hearing more about Josh and looking at his party shirt and stuff, I think we might have the same hair. But I'll be interested to see how he goes forward, because he kind of, just in the way, he kind of reminds me of myself a little bit.
Yeah.
Out of the comparisons, I'll take either of them. But, I'm sure Matt and Josh will, you know, will soon, they'll make their own mark. You know what I mean? I'm still a fan like you guys. So, when people are like, oh, you like Malcolm? I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm not. He's ridiculous. So
but you definitely are the Aussie Malcolm.
Well, I'll take it. I'll taste it so much. But I reckon Josh and Matt remind me of me probably the most.
Yeah, definitely. And then Fiona Wall Minami wants to say, who on the car should be pretending to be a yoga instructor? And do you wish you'd thought of the Botox strategy first?
Oh, that's the best. I love that on so many levels. It's so funny because people looking at it would be like, oh my God, frowning or whatever. That's so funny. Mm-hmm. But I just straight away my mind's getting excited because he's thinking that much about the game. Mm-hmm. And I just love it. Who should fake the yoga instructor? Well, that's the thing. I don't know much about these people from the first episode.
So
I don't have heaps to know about, but I am kind of a massive fan. The whole part of the yoga thing was to kind of keep my strategic levels down. So I think Lisa, I just thought to test, she came across like she knew the game 100%. And if it was maybe just someone else, it could become real threatening. She knows what she's got to do. She said it. It was just that quick snippet. And to test, it doesn't really matter because that seemed to not worry her. But if I heard Lisa talking like that, how much she was into surviving stuff, that would straight away add threat to her. So maybe someone wanted to downplay something, which she sounds like she's already planning on doing, would probably be Lisa.
Yeah, well, I'm always interested in thinking about the evolution of that pre-season strategy, where it used to be super defensive, or I mean, it's still largely super defensive.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a cop or I'm a lawyer, I don't want people to know, so I'll lie. I think you were the first one who took it offensive and were like, I don't need to hide anything. I think a lot about Survivor.
Do you know how much hate, not hate, but how many people just didn't see it as an attack move rather than a defense move. I was like, it's an attack. Like, I want to plant this seed in these people's heads that I am this chilled out person. It's got nothing to do with what I do. It's to make sure they know. Like, it's to tell them what I do and plant this seed of attack in their heads. And I just love hearing that from a fan. but yeah, I think that's why, you know, it's one of my prouder moves, because I think it definitely defined who I am. And I think it did add another element, whether it worked or not. But I think from that kind of stone, that stepping stone, we can see what other people kind of take on board.
Like Botox.
It doesn't have to be a profession. It can be Botox, but I just like people who get told they're on, thinking, all right, I'm starting now. Like, take every advantage you can. You know there's idols out there. Make one yourself and put it as, I remember production were like, oh, when we sent a uniform, they're like, oh, why do you have so many bracelets? I'm like, look, I'm going to break these down into a hidden beauty item. They're like, oh, that was sorry. They're like, you cheeky bugger. All good. I was like, yeah, I'm stoked. But you know, you need to think about what you can take out there with you, which can add to your arsenal. So I like how you've come with that attack kind of purpose. Hopefully it does more people do do the whole yoga thing and do some really cool stuff with it, because there's so much you can think of and do.
Well, for me, that evolution really started all the way back in season 7 when Johnny Fairplay thought, even before he went out, that he told his loved one at the time, who was Thunder D, you know, I'm going to pretend that my grandma died. And he revolutionized the game in, you know, and I'm not going to play from day one. I'm not even going to play from day zero. Like, I'm playing from day -20. And he brought the game out of the game and was just thinking on a whole new level. And that's something that has definitely progressed in terms of lying about parts of your personal life. And as I said, your offensive move. And now we've gotten all the way to Botox. But, you know, that's the next evolution in that strategy, I guess.
It's so true. Like, it's so exciting because apart from Dave and Matt, you don't know who anyone is. You don't know anything about them, not even the clothes on their back. You got to think, like, Australia, we got items from home. Well, we didn't know they were coming. But now, if you go on getting cast, you know there's items from home. Work with that. That's coming to you. Think about it. You get letters from home. Think about it. I was going to use, so my letter was from mum, and that's how I was going to, you know, it wasn't pre-planned, but once I got the letter, I was like, well, this is now how I can use this to get people on my side. Anyway, but I just love, like, you hear me probably getting excited now about, like, that Botox stuff. It just gets me excited because they're thinking. And even like JT and Dylan, they're playing from the first second they step on the beach. They were probably before were riding in lockdown, who the people they want to work with, what's going to go down. Like, these are the type of people I love to watch. And that's what will get New Survivor New Zealand another season and another. And that's the same with Australia. So, like, right now we need these players that will put Botox in their face because they know it's another element, whether it work or not, that they're already in the game. If he's going to put Botox in his head, he's going to do a lot of other things on the island too.
For sure. So Jim Rosario wants to know, did the male-to-female imbalance steer the vote toward a woman? I thought this was a really interesting question because I think we've only had male-to-female season imbalances 4 times, I think season 14, 22, 23, and 29. And the times that they've had this 4-5 tribal imbalance, sorry, 22 and 23 was they had the same amount of men and women like this, but they had a different tribal imbalance where it was 4 and then 5. So that's very odd to me. I kind of have to wonder what would happen if 2 men or 2 women had been picked or had won that first challenge where they weren't picking man to woman. It's very, I can't work my head around the math of that. But, you know, there's definitely a point where Chani might have thought, they have 5 men. We have 4 men. We can't really get rid of a man because then we're down to 5 and 3 in the gender imbalance, and maybe the physical imbalance does get, like, pretty big.
I didn't even think of that. That's such a good point.
Yeah, I don't know what
those men are. That. So who's got the 4 men? The one that survived?
The one that just went to tribal have 4 men. So now there's 4 men. Yeah. There's 4 and 5 as they were because they voted off a woman. It definitely could have played into it, but obviously we don't know. Vanessa Yank Turnier wants to say, if you were a team captain, who would your top 2 picks be for your team?
Oh, so the first one would have been a girl. it would have been really, really tough. Like I said, Tara, she was already picked. Eve comes across as just by her look and nature, I would probably pick her. She just seems chilled out.
Yeah.
Or Frankie probably as those two girls. And then the guys, I would probably pick. So you know me, I'm a bit different with getting the strongest team. You know me, I'll go challenge, I'll get rid of my threats. So, but then, I don't know. This is so tough. That's why, it's not common to survive this stuff. Maybe, probably Josh, just because I think he reminds me of myself. Josh or Matt, probably, just because I'm like, all right, they like me, and that's probably how I'd do it.
Yeah.
But when I had my pick team, from there, I'd, because you couldn't just, and you're so right. This is where the age demographic comes into it. I don't see that old guy or that, you know, that really old lady that you can tell. So it's, there's a lot of similarities in this cast, but they are all different. But yeah, I think I'd go, yeah, Josh and Matt for the boys.
For sure. John Johnson wants to know, name one thing besides Pad Thai that you know about Thailand.
That was so funny.
Yeah. Adam's the best.
Oh, not much, but yeah, it's a cleaner version of Bali. yeah, not a whole lot.
What have you been to Thailand before?
I love Thai food. I love Thai food. I haven't. Yeah.
You haven't been?
Thai food, Thai is my favorite cuisine. Haven't been. And we'll go. Yes.
Yeah.
Good question. That was a funny line, though.
Yeah. Matthew Eichel wants to know, so the lesson of the day that Carla learned as verbalized by Frankie was you have to be really careful with the machete. I thought that was so funny. Were there any dumb common sense tips that you heard someone say on your season?
Oh, heaps of dumb, even for me. Like, you are delirious. You just say some dumb things. I can't really, none are really standing out, but like, you lost brain cells out there.
And definitely also fingers if you won't be careful with the machete.
Exactly. Yeah, that looked nasty. There weren't any, none that come to mind, unfortunately. Michelle, when we were at the water well, put her hand in it when day two, when she was filling up her bottle and thought she contaminated it. And we were all just like, there's bugs in there, there's dirt in there. We just didn't see the contamination issue about it, but that was a bit of a running joke for her. For a bit, I've always said to her packing actually early.
Really?
But she was probably, before the challenge, she was probably the one going.
Wow.
Yeah, but I think everyone out there is a bit dumb, but yeah, there's some classic lines out there.
Yep. Andrea Mustrali Mount says, I do not remember any instances of exploding rocks surrounding the fire pit. Is this something that happens in Australian or, I guess, US Survivor, but does not make the show? Have you? Did anything like this happen to you? Like, this was a hilarious scene where they were being attacked by their fire pit.
It was the best. But then I was like, why are you putting water on? Like, I understand. I was like, just go away from me. Let the rocks spurt out themselves. I was like, do not put water on fire any time. I'm like, do not do it.
Just get attacked by the starving. Rocks.
Yeah, I was like, take the rocks. Do not lose fire. But yeah, never seen it. It was a class. It was so funny. I was like, oh my God. It was so exciting. But yeah, I've never seen that before. Have you seen any in the US?
No, and so I guess we're nearing like 40 international seasons now, and there can still be firsts, like people getting attacked by exploding rocks. I was getting freaked out, like behind the screen was jumping, so it must have been pretty scary for them.
It was a nasty crack, and then they shot at you. Yeah.
Nick Fishman says, Chani screams to me that they could be the next Oolong tribe. Do you think they're in danger of losing too many challenges? Do you see Chani winning many more, or do you think that they're just like on a losing streak now?
Well, now you mentioned about the four or five difference in the guys that already put them on the back foot. In terms of general strength, I know it's not always like that in the challenges. It does put them on the back burner, but to be honest, a lot of it comes down to the last leg of a challenge, or it did in our season, and that puzzle seemed pretty easy. So it might not have been. They might have just smashed it. But generally the last leg, whether it's throwing or, you know, seesaw sandbags or, you know, doing a puzzle is generally where you can catch teams out. So I don't think all is lost. I think depending on the challenge, that last clutch play is where a team shines and you don't need that physical prowess all the time.
Yeah, and I mean, we also saw that they lost reward and they didn't have flint and they couldn't make fire, they couldn't eat. So now that they have flint,
yeah,
it might be a different story with some actual food, but yeah, and, not a great start.
Yeah, I get that. Like, they're not eating, but, like, the people that are eating, I know it is something, but you're not getting heat. Like, everyone's like, oh, it'll make a massive difference. Like, mentally, yeah, it's good, but, like, you're on Survivor, you're in front of a camera, you're going your hardest. Like, a handful of rice ain't going to deter you if you're a better athlete or smarter or whatever. Whoever's the better team will win, whether or not they've got it. But, yeah, you're right, now they're both eating, will be good to see.
Yeah, and it does look pretty brutal next time. It looks like there's medical calls and it just looks really intense. Hopefully no one gets medevaced. We always hate that. Ooh. But it looks like it's going to be a fiery second episode.
Yeah, well, I saw in the intros that they're doing the old school Heroes vs. Villains boxing match that we did our season, which I'm not sure if that's next step, but that'll always bring a bit of brutality.
Yeah.
So the challenges are picking up a bit.
Yeah, I mean, even in this reward challenge, I think they said Keisha was like drowning them in the mud. Like, it was brutal.
Yeah. Oh, brutal.
Okay, well, that's all the questions that I have for you, Henry. Was there anything that you wanted to add, any final thoughts that you had about the episode?
Nah, Sharon, just thanks for getting me on because, yeah, like I said, I haven't watched Survivor since playing and watching now is back, and it definitely reminded me how much I absolutely love it. And thanks for getting me on board. I absolutely love picking apart Survivor, every little element to it. And, yeah, if you ever need another episode down the track, need some company, I'm keen to watch and get on board. I'm going to be watching every episode now on, so
great.
It's really got me hooked. So.
I'm glad we've reignited that passion.
Let me know. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, this was so much fun. Where can people find you, Henry, on social media and also the great work that you're doing with PanCare? Is there any links that you want to give out?
Yeah, so basically just on my Instagram, Henry Schnicks, so Henry S-H-N-I-C-S. Basically all the stuff with PanCare that I'm doing is seen through that. It's kind of like my one best, so I'm not on Facebook much. I'm not on WhatsApp much or Snapchat. I don't have that. So really actually getting my zen hand in Survivor, so trying to cut down on socials. But, yeah, at the moment, though, if you need a Mother's Day present, check out my Instagram. There are plenty of links because I'm working with an Adelaide jeweler and we're selling charms and 50% of the proceeds will go to PanCare, and it's open all the way till Mother's Day. So check out my Instagram and there's links there, and help out if you can. If not, just raise the awareness when you can. And thanks for the opportunity to get a little plug in.
Yeah, well, that's absolutely brilliant, Henry. I love hearing all the work that you're doing for that and using your Survivor platform to do something so, so good. So we've got some fun guests coming up. I will announce who we have next week for week two. Henry, he's someone that you played with. We have the great AK coming on next week to discuss episode two. So that's going to be a lot
very
of fun.
Cool.
Yeah, definitely check it out. And it's been such a good first episode. I've got such high hopes about the season, and I'm just looking forward to talking about all of the strategy we've seen, all of these really great characters, and I just hope it continues on in this really, really positive fashion.
Yeah, exactly. Like you probably heard from AK's podcast, definitely tune in because he, like me, like Shannon, just absolutely loves to pick apart a game, and strategy's the first thing on his mind. So, yeah, I'm going to be listening myself. So it looks
great,
like I'm really invested in this season. So I'm excited.
Yeah. So last thing, what is the hashtag for this episode of the podcast? For anyone who made it to the end, I've got a few options for you, Henry, of what people can just hashtag on social media. Of course, guys, you can always hashtag KnowItOz, hashtag RHAP, but our specific episode hashtag, okay, well, I kind of want to do Chismisms. I told you that.
Yeah.
I've got hashtag Matt and Dave Wash, hashtag Evolution of Botox. Well, we did do a Botox strategy last week, but it would be worthy of 2 weeks. What do you think, Henry? Do you have anything?
To me, it was the first time I heard about the Botox. I thought it was ripper. Yeah, science. Yeah, I just love it.
Okay, we'll do hashtag evolution of Botox, and maybe every week we'll have Botox in the hashtag. Maybe this is now our running theme.
Yes.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Shannon Gaitz. That's S-H-A-N-N-O-N-G-A-I-T-Z. I love hearing your feedback, guys. I just want to thank everyone so much for the support I've had over the last few days. On Twitter, I love hearing from you guys on Rob Has a Website or in the Patreon group. Just I'm really enjoying talking about the show, but thank you everyone for how kind everyone has been and all the support. I really appreciate it. This is still like a dream to me that I'm hosting my own Survivor podcast, and I'm having just so much fun talking to you, Henry, and talking about the episode. So it's been a great week for me. You can find the podcast at Rob Has a Website in the Survivor feed or on reality TV or Hap Ups in your podcast app. I mean, I guess you know that because you're listening to it now, but tell your friends, listen to this podcast. And that's pretty much it for us. Do you have anything else, Henry?
No, all good. All good. Thanks, Shannon.
Thank you so much for coming on. Thank you to you guys for listening. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. And we will talk to you next week. Bye.
See ya.